Being the foreign affairs columnist for the New York Times is actually the best job in the world. I mean, someone has to have the best job, right? Well, I've got it, and you don't. The reason it is such a great job is that I get to be a tourist with an attitude. I get to go anywhere, anytime, and have attitudes about what I see and hear. But the question for me as I embarked on this odyssey was, which attitudes? What would be the lens, the perspective, the organizing system, the super story through which I would look at the world, make sense of events, prioritize them, opine upon them, and help readers understand them? In some ways, my predecessors had it a little easier. They each had a very obvious superstory and international system in place when they were writing. I am the fifth foreign affairs columnist in the history of the Times. Foreign Affairs is actually the paper's oldest column. It was begun in 1937 by a remarkable woman, Anne O'Hare McCormick, and was originally called In Europe, because in those days, In Europe was foreign affairs for most Americans. And it seemed perfectly natural that the paper's one overseas columnist would be located on the European continent. The international system, which she covered, was the disintegration of Balance of Power Versailles Europe and the beginnings of World War II. As America emerged from World War II, though, standing astride the world as the preeminent superpower with global responsibilities and engaged in a global power struggle with the Soviet Union, the title of the column changed in 1954 to Foreign Affairs. Suddenly, the whole world was America's playing field, and the whole world mattered, because every corner was being contested with the Soviet Union. The Cold War international system, with its competition for influence and supremacy between the capitalist West and the communist East, between Washington, Moscow, and Beijing, became the superstory within which the next three foreign affairs columnists organized their opinions and attitudes. By the time I started the column at the beginning of 1995, though, the Cold War was over. The Berlin Wall had crumbled, and the Soviet Union was history. But what wasn't clear to me as I embarked upon my column assignment was what had replaced the Cold War system as the dominant organizing framework for international affairs. So I actually began my column as a tourist without an attitude, just an open mind. For several years, I, like everyone else, just referred to the post-Cold War world. We knew some new system was aborning that constituted a different framework for international relations. But we couldn't define what it was, so we defined it by what it wasn't. It wasn't the Cold War, so we called it the post-Cold War world. The more I traveled, though, the more it became apparent to me that this system had its own logic and deserved its own name, globalization. Globalization is not a phenomenon. It is not just some passing trend. Today, it is the overarching international system shaping the domestic politics and foreign relations of virtually every country, and we need to understand it as such. When I speak of the Cold War system, though, and the globalization system, what do I mean? I mean that as an international system, the Cold War had its own structure of power, the balance between the United States and the USSR. The Cold War had its own rules. In foreign affairs, neither superpower would encroach on the other's sphere of influence. In economics, less developed countries would focus on nurturing their own national industries, while developing countries would focus on export-led growth, and communist countries on autarky, and Western economies on regulated trade. The Cold War had its own dominant ideas, the clash between communism and capitalism, as well as détente, non-alignment, and perestroika. The Cold War had its own demographic trends. The movement of peoples from east to west was largely frozen by the Iron Curtain, but the movement from south to north was a more steady flow. The Cold War had its own perspective on the globe. The world was a space divided into the communist camp, the Western camp, and the neutral camp, and everyone's country was in one or the other. The Cold War had its own defining technologies. Nuclear weapons and the Second Industrial Revolution were dominant, but for many people in developing countries, the hammer and sickle were still relevant tools. The Cold War had its own defining measurement, the throw weight of nuclear missiles. And lastly, the Cold War had its own defining anxiety, nuclear annihilation. When taken all together, the elements of this Cold War system influenced the domestic politics and foreign relations of virtually every country in the world. The Cold War system didn't shape everything, but it shaped many things. Today's era of globalization, which replaced the Cold War, is a similar international system with its own unique attributes.